We're back. I'm Anoush Zomorodi. This is Zigzag. And there's a lot of talk right now about if it's possible to transform capitalism into a kinder, more inclusive version of itself, while still building competitive businesses and developing ambitious employees. My business partner, Jen Poyant, and I think about it all the time. Well, Ari Weinzweig has been doing it for decades. With a portrait of a man who believes in the power of capitalism, community, and cream cheese, here's Jen.
As many podcast producers do, I got Ari to say his name.
Your title, and where am I talking to?
My name's Ari Weinzweig, and I'm sitting at Zingtrain, our training business, part of the Zingerman's community of businesses in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
And then asked him for a mic check with the question, what'd you have for breakfast?
I don't actually eat breakfast, and today would be no exception.
Never.
I don't eat lunch either. I just eat dinner.
Ari's meal schedule is unorthodox. Later, he told me he's tasting food all day. A bite of coffee cake from the bakehouse, a nibble of new gelato flavor at the creamery. Because Zingerman's is a collective of small companies all under the Zingerman's name, each operated by one or more partners. Inc. magazine once called Zingerman's the coolest small company in America. But before there was a candy company or a coffee roaster, Zingerman's started with a deli.
And you founded, like you said, in 1982 with a partner, with a $20,000 bank loan. Is that right?
It is right. And $2,000 that my grandmother lent us, no interest. In those days, it wasn't an insignificant amount of money. And also, no interest in 1982 was a big deal because it was 18% interest rates to the bank.
That's crazy.
Well, most things are actually crazy. We just become acclimated to them and stop thinking they're crazy.
After many years of proven success with their deli, Ari and his partner decided they wanted to build up that interconnected network of independent businesses. Now the Zingerman's Collective includes a Korean restaurant, a vegetable farm, a mail order business, and a consulting company that helps other companies envision what they want their businesses to be. The idea is all of these mini companies profit and help each other's businesses offer the best products and services. Sounds cool, right? It also seems to work financially. According to Ari, the Zingerman's community of businesses brought in millions of dollars in sales last year.
Our year just ended August or July 31st, so I don't know, $65
million. And as Corey mentioned, for some customers, the Zingerman's philosophies are part of what makes the food so delicious. Next to the deli counter, you'll find pamphlets and guides about the Zingerman's brand of leadership and management. But it all comes back to Ari and his belief that business is more than revenue, and that envisioning what you want your company to become is crucial.
When we opened, we did not know anything about visioning the way we do now, but I wrote an essay in part one of the business book, which is called 12 Natural Laws of Business, and it's my ever more strongly held belief that all healthy organizations of any size, scope, geography, or whatever, are living in harmony with those 12 natural laws. So they won't know them. They will not be able to list them, but they're doing it. And the first one on the list is that all successful, and I don't mean the people who make the most money, but the people who are either individually or collectively living the life they want to lead in a meaningful and imperfect but productive way, have a vision of where they're going, right? And so sometimes it's in your head, and you know, like yours is now, and that's how we were when we opened. I mean, our vision would have included, had we written one, that we wanted something that was really unique and not a copy of something from New York or Detroit or Chicago or whatever. We knew we wanted a great place for people to work and really great food and service in a really down-to-earth setting. And we knew from the beginning we only wanted one. I really like unique things, whether it's art or music. And I have a pamphlet that came out last December that's called The Art of Business, which sort of elucidates that belief even more than I ever could have said it in 1982. But you know, which is just the idea that life and business and organization are like music or art, and that the most interesting people to be, you know, around in those fields are the ones that are doing their own thing.
But how then, if you're going to do something cool and weird and experimental, a lot of people say, well, that's hard to do when you're running a business because you still got to think about the bottom line and make the money.
I don't think one has any is precludes the other at all. Mm-hmm. I mean, how you prioritize what you value is your choice, right? So I'm trying to work more, not less. I'm going to run out of years and I got a lot to do. Other people are trying to work less. Fabulous. Yeah. I don't judge them for it. It's not my place to tell them what to do. It's just my free choice to pursue what I'm pursuing in a way that's meaningful to me, right? And so, you know, like we're doing okay financially, but we're not like making the kind of money that we would make if we pursued the business in a different way. But, you know, we all have the issues of comparison,
yep.
You know, and the emotional struggles around that. I've spent a lot of years working at it and, you know, whatever, therapy and self-awareness and, you know, to be able to say like, whatever, man, it's not my, I don't have to live their life. I've come over the last 3 or 4 years to really look at business or organization more like an ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Because most of the models that are used are either sports, which is fine in sports, but somebody always loses. Mm-hmm. And I don't like that. Or machines, which, you know, is said all the time, like we got to get this under control. We got to get the engine humming. We got to get the gears greased, you know. And it's actually very dehumanizing and actually counter to nature. And when you look at organization more like an ecosystem, then you start to realize that success and failure coexist all the time, that failure is turned into health in a healthy ecosystem, that every tiny little thing matters in a way that the hierarchical thinking that's so endemic and most all of us were raised with is actually not true in nature. You know, so a giant tree can be killed by a tiny insect, right? So it's really more holistic. And then also my study and interest of anarchism is, you know, what anarchism is really is a way of treating people and a positive belief in human beings.
And you started out, you know, having studied anarchist philosophy. It seems like Emma Goldman, from what I can tell, was a big influence on you as you studied.
I can tell you all about who she is because I got a whole new pamphlet that just came out called Going Into Business with Emma Goldman. And it's Emma Goldman was 100 years ago or so called by J. Edgar Hoover the most dangerous woman in America. So she was born in Lithuania. She came to the United States in 1885. She was quite outspoken. She went to jail a lot. She spoke a lot on anarchism, but also a lot on birth control, on women's rights, et cetera, et cetera. So she was expelled from the United States in 1919 in the same way that a lot of issues. In fact, many of the current social issues in 2019 are actually very close replications of what was happening in 1919. It was the Red Summer. There was enormous racial violence across the country. Women were fighting for their rights and respect in that era. So my belief is that she actually was way ahead of her time and that, you know, they were reacting to a lot of the hierarchy and stuff of the Industrial Revolution, but that if you focused on how to create healthy communities based on a lot of the philosophies and principles she put forward, that they're really good business lessons. So one of them is the belief that the means that we use to achieve an end have to be congruent with the end in order to work, right? So if we want to create a peaceful society, you can't do it through violence. If you want to create an organization in which people are engaged, you can't do it by ignoring them and having a meeting with only the top leaders. So that's a big one. You know, she said, when we can't dream any longer, we die. I think that's true spiritually for sure. You know, nobody achieves greatness without a dream or a vision of where they want to go. If you have no hope for the future, you're never going to work hard. I mean, you know, it really lays out quite an interesting philosophical framework for a healthy, progressive organization. I mean, I think the point is that our work is to help people become themselves. That's number one. Number two, our work is to help everybody learn to be a leader and think like a leader and lead. So leadership is not tied to hierarchy. Hierarchy gives it a title, but part of what I realized a few years ago, and it's in part two of the book, is that everybody that works here is responsible for leadership. So sometimes the newest employee you hired still needs to be the leader because the idea that the manager is going to have all the answers is silly. Mm-hmm. If we exclude people because they're new or we exclude people because they're 18 or we, you know, whatever, it's equally problematic to excluding people because they're black or they're Jewish or they're tall or whatever, you know. So I think the point is to have meaningful conversations as best you can with everybody. And yeah, for sure. I mean, sometimes like it's all interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, the idea of helping people to be artists, creating their life is, you know, it's an honor to be able to contribute in some small ways to that, right?
Absolutely. And do you sit down with your employees and do the futuring process as well?
We teach it to everybody.
It's funny because Manoush and I did this just about a month ago together in my apartment. And I don't know if we did it exactly like you do it. I just know we just...
Probably not, but that's okay.
But, you know, we put up a bunch of paper on the walls and then did exactly what you talked about, mostly for the short term, for the next like couple of years. But we also did it for our personal lives, 50 years down the road, what we want our lives to look like. Because we both have kids. And, you know, if you're going to run a small business or a medium-sized business or any business, you have to be able to kind of look at both. But it was very helpful. It helped us narrow down the type of partners that we potentially want to work with in the future, the type of projects we want to create, the type of people that we don't necessarily want to make deals with. So I'm just curious, can you explain the process of preferred futuring for our listeners?
Yeah. I mean, it's we do it in prose, so it's not a list and it's not pictures, although those can help you. But we actually like sit down and you would describe, you pick the date in which you're going to be at the time of the vision. So it's not a timeless thing. It's time constrained. And then you would write a story basically about what your life is like collectively or individually with a whole bunch of details that are meaningful to you. So if how much money you make doesn't really matter, then don't worry about it. But if what's, you know, playing on the stereo makes a difference, or what you're eating makes a difference, or who you're with or what you're looking at makes a difference, then those go in there. So it's not a business plan, although it overlaps with the business plan, but we generally use the metaphor, which I did not make up, of the person who's goes to the construction site of the Duomo in Milan, so which I think is late 15th century, and he comes to the first person who's working and says, "What are you doing?" And that guy says, "I'm laying stone." Comes to the next person, "What are you doing?" And he or she says, "I'm building a cathedral." Right. So, you know, the obvious questions are, physically, is there any difference in the work the two people are doing? And the obvious answer is no. They're both putting mortar and stone together and going home and coming back and doing it over and over again. But emotionally, what's the difference? The difference is when you see something amazing that you're working to build, even if it's years in the future, you have a sense of purpose. You have a sense of understanding how the tiny things you do today will impact the future. Your energy is higher. Your care is higher. Your commitment is higher. So the vision is basically the future you want to create. It's true for your personal life. It's true for your work. It's true for any project that you're going to do. If you don't know where you're going,
yeah,
it's hard to get where you want to go. It's just most of the world has been trained to think of what's wrong, who's in the way, who's getting in the way, who's not doing their part, who's at fault. And this is a process of actually imagining the future that you want without worrying in the moment about how you're going to get there. That comes later. And so we are working now organizationally on our vision for 2032.
Do you think outside of running a specific type of business like the one you're doing, and also, you know, you write prolifically, of course, on management, so that's another facet of creating change in the world. But do you think beyond business, America or our world, we just need to be doing this more collectively as a society too, and maybe perhaps as a democracy?
Well, I think it's a universal human skill, and it's a natural law. Like, you can't get to greatness if you don't have a shared vision that you believe in. And so now, my anarchism will tell you that the whole idea of nation states is made up and they don't actually exist other than on paper. And not saying, trying to be negative, but the belief that somebody in Alaska has anything to do with somebody in Alabama any more than they have to, the Alabama has to do with Antigua, and, you know, is kind of weird. And the idea you could get 300 million people to agree on a vision, like, I'm having a hard time. It took a year to get 21 partners to agree on a draft with a lot of arguments. So now try to get 300 million people to all agree on a vision. It's not going to happen. Now, I don't know what to do about that, but that's part of the problem, is there's no one's really even offering a vision.
Yeah.
with all due respect, even to the people I like their beliefs better than the ones I don't like, they're still not offering a vision. They're mostly offering solutions to problems, which is the antithesis of visioning.
Seems like you can kind of do whatever you want now.
No. Well, anybody can do whatever they want. There's just consequences.
Yeah, but don't you feel like a sense of security just in general?
No.
That you can pretty much do? Go out. You don't?
No.
Even now?
No.
Why?
Because that's how I feel. I mean, feelings are, you don't have to justify. I went to therapy enough to know feelings just exist. Number one. Number two, it's true. There's no safe place. I mean, we could be out of business in a year. It's not that hard to go out of business. In fact, it's incredibly easy to go out of business.
So I'm going to always have that feeling. It's only a year in for me, but I can be rest assured I'll have that feeling 20 years from now, hopefully.
Well, a lot of my stress went down when I realized that it was always going to be imperfect. And I used to have this image that, like, if we succeeded, it would be like laying on this mountain pool in Colorado in a sunny day, you know, looking up at this beautiful mountain view. And then eventually I realized it was actually like whitewater rafting. And there's like 30 seconds where you feel like things are going good, but then some email complaint comes or some bad number shows up or, you know, some employee, you know, one employee loves you and the next one thinks everything sucks. And one customer says, this is the greatest meal I ever had. And the next one's like, you guys clearly don't care about quality. And like, it all happens in 3 minutes.
Right.
Every day.
That's why we call it zigzag.
Right. Well, that's the reality. And that's where, again, you know, coming back to the ecosystem, it's all happening at once, right? And, you know, there's dying branches on healthy trees. And it's not either, like, forests are not successes. Like, they just are. And, you know, even in a healthy forest, there's things going on. And people forget, but, like, you know, whoever wins the NBA championship, whoever won last year, Toronto, like they still missed a lot of shots in the game that they won.
Yeah.
And they still made bad plays. It's just no one's thinking about it because they won. But in life, it's not like that. And so how you treat your kid when they're 7 matters. And how you treat them this afternoon matters. It's really how you treat them today over and over and over and over again. It adds up to something big. And so when companies fail, I think hierarchical thinking and a quest for drama leads people to look for the big headline.
Sure.
Like you're a failure or you're a success. Those are labels that are laid on people. So anyway, I'm still anxious about it. And I think when you stop being anxious, then it leads to failure because it's complacency. And, you know, over-worrying dominates your life too. So somewhere in the middle is a healthy level of anxiety. And also, I guess I would say that there's a difference between anxiety of pursuing what you believe in and not knowing you can get there, which is the opposite end of the continuum from the anxiety of doing what you don't believe in because somebody else told you you should. You know, it's the anxiety of going to work in a workplace that you don't share the values. It's the anxiety of being in a relationship you don't want to be in. It's the anxiety of working on stuff you don't believe is good, but you need a paycheck. And that's where burnout comes from, in my belief, not from working too much.
Thank you so much, Ari.
Thank you.
Ari says that if you want to get in touch, you can reach him at ari@zingermans.com. Also, all those books he talked about are published and sold at Zingermans, so you can find them on Zingermans' website, but not on Amazon. We're going to have a quick break. Then I'll be back with Manoush to tell you more about our own visioning experiment, the one I mentioned earlier. Be right back.